Hi. Our next speaker is Carrie Klum. She's a zoonotic disease epidemiologist in our group at the Minnesota Department of Health. She's also project coordinator for our UMASH project, which is the Upper Midwest Agricultural Safety and Health Center with the University of Minnesota. And with that project, she has designed some of our greatest outreach efforts, including healthy fairs workshops and agritourism workshops that pull all the people together involved with these venues and talk about environmental health, human health, and animal health. She has an MPH degree from in environmental health from the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, and she likes gardening. Thank you, Carrie.
All right, can everybody hear me? And can you actually see me? I wasn't sure if you'd be able to see me. Tall this podium. Okay, Joni, thank you very much for the introduction. So agriculture is an important part of Minnesota's economy. And Minnesota ranks 8th overall in the United States in livestock production. We are the number one producer of turkeys, number 2 for hogs, number 8 for dairy products, and number 9 for beef. We have over 74,000 farms that take up just over 50% of all of the land area in our state, and agricultural or ag, not egg, I know that sometimes it sounds like egg when I say, but ag exports are the number one export industry in our state. The Minnesota Department of Health, or MDH's, enteric reportable disease surveillance system is centralized, active, statewide, and laboratory-based. And it has been around since 1996, and it allows MDH to ascertain every laboratory-confirmed case of a reportable enteric illness in Minnesota. MDH makes multiple attempts to interview every case using pathogen-specific questionnaires that collect information on demographics, symptom history, food consumption, animal contact, and other potential exposures. This graph shows the number of cases of enteric pathogens reported per year to MDH from 2000 through 2015. Generally, Campylobacter is the most commonly reported enteric pathogen, but in 2015, Salmonella took over, followed closely behind by Campylobacter. The remaining pathogens have far fewer cases reported each year than either Salmonella or Campylobacter. A little background, previous studies have quantified fatal injuries, the effects of chronic pesticide exposures, hearing loss, and numerous other non-infectious health threats in ag workers and their families. However, to date, systematic population-based data on zoonotic disease, diseases in animal ag workers are lacking, so much so that the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, or NIOSH, lists surveillance as its first strategic goal for the National Occupational Research Agenda, or NORA. So MDH joined the Upper Midwest Agricultural Safety and Health Center, or UMASH, in 2011, and UMASH is funded by NIOSH. In 2012, we began a study to better describe the frequency of zoonoses in animal ag workers, their families, and others exposed to animal ag settings in Minnesota. Our findings from this study will help us develop, implement, and evaluate educational campaigns and other disease prevention measures. Cases were not eligible for the study if they traveled internationally in the 7 or 14 days prior to illness onset, depending on the pathogen, if they were part of an outbreak, or if they refused to be interviewed or were lost to follow-up and could not be reached. Cases were eligible for the study if they had a laboratory-confirmed case of Campylobacter, Cryptosporidium parvum, Salmonella, or a shigatoxin-producing E. coli or STEC infection, with a specimen collection date between January 1st of 2012 and December 31st of 2015, and they indicated on their initial surveillance interview that they had lived, worked, or visited an animal egg farm or animal egg venue in the 7 or 14 days prior to their illness. Cases who met the inclusion criteria and agreed to participate in the study were re-interviewed with a questionnaire specific to the type of animal egg exposure that they had. Agriculture exposures were categorized into 3 different tiers. Tier 1 is designated as the highest tier. Each case was only assigned to one tier and was assigned based on their highest risk exposure, regardless of the number of ag exposures they had. Tier 1 were cases who lived and or worked on a farm with food animals. Tier 2 cases visited a farm with food animals. And then Tier 3 cases visited another type of animal agriculture venue, such as a fair, a petting zoo, or an ag skills camp. This is just a disclaimer that all these data are preliminary and subject to change. So first I'll be reviewing our E. coli 0157H7 findings. So this flowchart shows the number of E. coli 0157 cases that were eligible for the UMASH study. 31% of cases reported an animal egg exposure, and of those, 45% were in Tier 1, 31% were in Tier 2, and 24% were in Tier 3. When I present specific animal exposure data during the rest of the talk, I will be doing so only for Tier 1 cases. So animal exposure characteristics of Tier 1 E. coli 0157 cases are as follows. 68% reported that cattle were present on the farm, and of those, 50% reported direct contact with cattle. Only 5% reported goats being present, and no one reported sheep present. Moving on to non-0157 shigatoxin-producing STEC E. coli infections. So this flow chart shows non-0157 cases that were eligible for the UMASH study. 16% of cases reported an animal egg exposure prior to their illness, and of those, 39% were in Tier 1, 31% were in Tier 2, and 30% were in Tier 3. And when we look at their animal exposure characteristics, 72% of Tier 1 non-0157 STEC cases reported cattle present on the farm, and of those, 50% reported direct contact with the cattle. 17% reported goats being present on the farm, and of those, 3 of those 4 reported contact with goats. 13% reported sheep being present on the farm, and of those, 2 of 3 reported contact with sheep. Next is non-typhoidal salmonella enterica infections. When we look at this flow chart, the salmonella cases, this flowchart again shows the salmonella cases that were eligible for the UMASH study. 15% of cases reported an animal agriculture exposure, and of those, 56% were in Tier 1, 22% in Tier 2, and 22% in Tier 3. 49% of Tier 1 salmonella cases reported poultry present on their farm, and of those, 69% reported direct contact with the poultry. 37% reported cattle present on the farm, and of those, 63% reported contact with cattle. 22% reported swine present on the farm, and of those, 68% reported direct contact with swine. Sheep and goats were not commonly reported, but contact was high among those who did. Next is Campylobacter. So this flowchart shows Campylobacter cases that were eligible for the UMASH study. 26% of them reported an animal agriculture exposure, and of those, 70% were in Tier 1, 25% in Tier 2, and 5% in Tier 3. So 69% of Tier 1 Campylobacter cases reported cattle present on the farm, and of those, 74% reported direct contact with cattle. 52% reported poultry present on the farm, and of those, 62% reported direct contact. And then much lower percentage reported swine, goats, and sheep on the farm, all of them reporting fairly high contact if those animals were present. And our final enteric pathogen that I will be presenting on is Cryptosporidium parvum. So this flowchart shows the number of C. parvum cases that were eligible for a study inclusion for the UMASH study. 52% of them reported an animal agriculture exposure, and of those, 51% were in Tier 1, 45% in Tier 2, and 4% in Tier 3. The major animal exposure for C. parvum cases was cattle. 90% of cases reported cattle being present, and of those, 83% reported direct contact with cattle. Goats and sheep were present, but in much lower percentages than cattle. So I apologize for how busy this table is, but trying to summarize everything that I've just presented to you. So this slide really summarizes in that first column the percent of cases with an animal egg exposure by pathogen, so just overall percentage. So Cryptosporidium parvum has the highest percentage at 52%, followed by E. coli 0157 at 31%, Campylobacter at 26% of the cases, non-0157 STEC 16%, and then Salmonella 15%. The second column is really looking only at Tier 1 cases, and when we look at who was put into Tier 1, over half of all Salmonella, Campylobacter, and C. parvum cases that had an animal egg exposure either lived and or worked on a food animal farm. The third column is the median age for Tier 1 cases, and that was the highest among salmonella cases at 37.5 years, and the lowest among E. coli 157 cases, which was 14.5 years. And then the final column is the median time that someone spent either living or working on a farm prior to this reported illness. And for non-0157 STEX, it was 1 year, and for salmonella, it was 8 years. And so that was the range between 1 and 8 years. But when we look at the range for each pathogen, you can see that it's a huge range. So we had people, you know, working or living on a farm for as little as a month all the way up to several decades before having a reportable enteric illness. So this table shows the animals by species present for Tier 1 cases by pathogen during our study period from 2012 through 2015. So overall, cattle were the most common animal species, with the exception of poultry for salmonella cases. You can also see that poultry are fairly common in our Campylobacter cases. And for both salmonella and Campylobacter, all five different species were present for cases. This table compares our UMASH estimates from this study with animal egg exposure, UMASH estimates of cases with animal egg exposure to published estimates of the percent of cases with animal contact from the Hale et al. Paper. So these Hale estimates are measuring slightly different things. For example, they look at all Cryptosporidium species, and we only looked at Cryptosporidium parvum. But it's kind of the only estimate that's out there that's published that we can compare our estimates to. The bars on the Hale estimates represent the range and estimates for each pathogen that paper reported. So for UMASH, our percentages are higher for all reported pathogens. Crypto is especially striking at 52% compared to 16% in the Hale estimates. So the burden of disease attributable to animal egg exposures is considerable and greater than previous estimates. Campylobacter, C. parvum, and Salmonella had the highest absolute number of animal egg-associated cases, while Campylobacter, C. parvum, and E. coli 157 cases had the highest proportion of animal egg-associated cases. Cattle were the most important animal type overall, with the exception of poultry for salmonella cases. So more data analysis is necessary to better describe specific risk factors such as job duties or personal protective equipment use, and to identify specific populations at the highest risk. These results will inform MDH's continued development, implementation, and evaluation of prevention efforts through education and outreach programs. And I'd like to acknowledge people at the Minnesota Department of Health who helped with this study. And any questions?
Do you guys have any way of estimating the number of people every year that would have the right type of exposure?
That's a great question, and it's been really frustrating for us to get an accurate denominator even in an egg-intensive state. So we've been working on that for a number of years to get a reliable denominator, and I don't think we're quite there yet so that we could actually calculate some rates. But yes, that is a problem. We've gone through the National Agricultural Statistics Service, and it's not easy to just pull numbers out of that. So if anyone out there knows of a good way to get denominators, please let me know. Yeah, it's a problem.
Thank you for keeping on trying.
Hi, I'm Nora Wong from the Pew Charitable Trust. I have two questions.
Sure.
One of which maybe ties into the previous question. Do you know the breakdown of the people you surveyed? Are any of them seasonal migrant workers? And how do you account for their protection when part of the goal is to evaluate prevention?
Yeah. So I think that's an inherent problem working at the health department when you're using surveillance data. By default, that person has already gotten ill, or I wouldn't know about them. They wouldn't have come through surveillance. So as far as answering the prevention efforts, We worked very hard, like Joni said, with our healthy fairs and our eager tourism outreach workshops to try to prevent people from ever coming through on my desk. As far as seasonal migrant workers, we do ask people about their occupation, their race and ethnicity. Honestly, we don't see very many seasonal migrant workers. And I think that is probably because they're not seeking health care most of the time, and I wouldn't know about them unless they went to the doctor.
Second part of my question is, I saw you lumped poultry together, and I was wondering if you knew the breakdown between turkeys and chickens.
Not off the top of my head, but I could get that information for you. But yeah, I did lump them together because we actually asked about like backyard poultry, chickens, turkeys, waterfowl, ducks. I mean, so it's there were a lot, so I just sort of lumped poultry together.
Did it parallel with the fact that Minnesota is the number one producer of turkey, so we could assume that turkey is the major bird within poultry?
Yeah, I'm not sure if turkey really. There's a lot of chicken in there too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Marianne with Chicago, and I'm just curious. Did you ask them, do these people expose to multiple animals at the same time? Like, say they work on a cattle farm or they work on a swine farm?
Yes. So we ask Minnesotans are really nice, and they let us interview them a lot, and they don't tend to say no. So our interview for their second interview is 14 pages long. And we ask very specific questions about the species that are on the farm, the type of operation within that species. We get a head count for the animals that they have. And so oftentimes people are on a farm with multiple different species, but it tends to be one predominant species. Like they might be a dairy farm, or they might raise hogs predominantly, but then have some chickens. But we are able to account for that. So there are... they're not mutually exclusive, so people can have multiple different exposures to different animals. We also ask if they work on more than one farm or if they visited a farm and worked on a farm, but for our analysis, like I said earlier, we put them in their highest risk tier overall, regardless of how many exposures they had.
Are there any more questions for Carrie? Okay, well, let's thank her.
Thank you.